Welcome to Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. Bought anything on the internet lately? If so, the chances are pretty good that the information you sent to the vendor was encrypted, so that if it was intercepted en route through cyberspace, the bad persons who grabbed your information, especially your credit card number, wouldn't be able to make any sense out of it. But what the heck does encryption really mean, and why is it important in this day and age? Boy, that is a big topic, and it'll probably take a few editions of the Electronic Cottage to get all the way through it, but let's make a start right now. As far as we can trace back in history, people wanted to be able to hide the content of some messages from anyone but the intended recipient. Usually, those who wanted to keep messages secret were military people or rulers who didn't want information to fall into the hands of their enemies. They generally used two ways of keeping their messages secret, one that we refer to today as steganography, the other as cryptography. Now, right away, being the attentive listeners that you undoubtedly are, you notice that both words ends in graphy, which is from the ancient Greek word graphē, which means writing. If you stop to think about it, you'll recall that we hear the graphy ending on lots of words in English. For example, photography, from photos, light, and graphy, writing. So photography means, literally, writing with light. In the case of steganography, the etymology is equally instructive. Steganos in Greek means covered, so steganography is literally covered writing. Back in ancient times, that was one way to send a secret message. Disguise it as something else. So, you might write a message on a wooden staff, such as a walking stick, and then cover the staff with wax so it looked just like a plain stick. When the messenger got to the recipient would remove the wax, and voila, there was the message. There are even stories of messengers having their heads shaved, the message was written on the messenger's scalp, and then the hair grew back in. The messenger eventually went on his way, passed through all the enemy checkpoints, and when he arrived at the recipient's headquarters, shaved his head again, and voila, there was the message. Not the fastest way to send a message, but generally effective, at least until the enemy caught on. In more recent times, you may have seen in spy movies microdots used to hide a message. A spy would compose a message or take a photograph, and then reduce the photo to a tiny, tiny dot of photographic film that looked like a period, put the period at the end of a sentence on, say, page 200 of some harmless book, and carry the secret message in the book through customs and anywhere else. These days, steganographic messages are sometimes hidden in photographs or graphics. The popular Where's Waldo series of children's books uses something like a steganographic technique to hide Waldo or his mom or whoever in a sea of other look-alike characters. And the point of the game is to find him amongst all those people. But if you weren't looking specifically for Waldo and didn't know exactly what he looked like in the first place, you'd probably never notice him, which is the point of steganography. In fact, even when I'm looking for him, I often don't notice him. Hiding in plain sight, a bit of steganography in action. The important thing to note in steganography is that the message itself is in simple plain text. If anyone manages to take the wax off the staff or finds the photographic dot and magnifies it, the message is right there for anyone to read. For this reason, understandably, steganography alone has its limits. The other means of making a message secret is to encrypt it. That is, to represent the message using some depiction that is not the plain text. Once again, etymology is instructive here. The word cryptography means literally hidden writing. So, for example, suppose I wanted to send a message that said dog, but didn't want anyone except the recipient to know what the message was. I could have agreed with the recipient beforehand that whenever she saw the letter B in my message, it really meant D, and whenever she saw T, it really meant O, and whenever she saw V, it really meant G. If I encoded my message using that scheme, anyone who intercepted the message would simply see the sequence of letters BTV, and wouldn't know what my secret message meant. This method of cryptography is referred to as substitution, and the resulting message is a cipher. I might also have simply changed the order of the letters of the message. So instead of DOG, I might have sent a message that said ODG, switching the first and second letters to encrypt my message. This is referred to as transposition encryption. When dealing with a single short word like dog, transposition is not a particularly powerful way to make a message secret. After all, there are only 6 different ways to arrange the letters in the word dog, but suppose I had a message with 35 letters in it, which is not a very long message at all. Simon Singh, in his very readable book, Code, has calculated that you could arrange such a message in many different ways. To be precise, the number 50 with 30 zeros after it, different ways. All of a sudden, it becomes a very big problem to decode an intercepted message if you don't know how the code works. The same is true for substitution codes. Suppose that we simply rearrange the 26 characters of the alphabet so that no letter stands for itself. In that case, the number of possible different ways to arrange the cipher, or code, is 40 with 25 zeros after it. In order to make any of these codes effective, of course, both the sender and receiver have to know how the code works. In a transposition encryption, both parties would have to know, for example, that the first and second letters of each word were transposed. This is called the key to the code, and both parties, and no one else, have to know what the key is. As you might imagine, the key is crucial to effective encryption. And in fact, your computer, or more specifically, your browser, and the website that you're buying something from are sharing a key that enables your computer to encrypt the message you send to the vendor, your name and address and credit card and so on, and the vendor to decrypt it so that no one else can intercept and make sense of the message en route from your computer to the vendor's. But encryption these days can go far beyond e-commerce. You can encrypt email messages to your friends, for example. You can even encrypt the information on your hard drive if you wish. If you do encrypt your email, then the email messages that you send are unintelligible to spy technology like Echelon, which intercepts and scans all emails, faxes, and phone conversations that are transmitted over the air in any part of the transmission chain. In this age of microwave and satellite technology, that is pretty near every message you send by voice or computer. Now that we know how encryption works in a general way, we'll turn next to how encryption works in the digital age. Look at the tension between personal privacy and the government's desire to be able to intercept and decode messages for law enforcement. And we'll take a look at what will probably be the future of cryptography, quantum cryptography, which works at the level of photons, and so far as anyone knows now, uses the inviolable laws of physics to create the ultimate unbreakable cryptography system. But alas, time has flown today, and all that will have to wait for future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.